fight single-handedly broke up my marriage. You're an awful person.
You're 24 years old. Why would I listen to you? Why would you be giving therapy and advice to people who clearly need it? It doesn't make any sense, Ari. This is a horrible idea.
You're listening to
Unlicensed
Therapy with Ari Manis.
Ari Manis.
You live in Houston, right?
Yes, sir.
And have you always lived there? You used to live in New York or L.A.?
No.
That's wild.
I don't see no reason to.
No reason at all?
Never saw a reason to live in L.A. or New York. Not doing what I'm doing.
What about the New York pizza? Not a reason?
Because it's in the water. New York pizza is based on the water.
Exactly. Don't you want that, some of that water?
It's Queens water. I'm Brooklyn kid. Be in Brooklyn. If I'm in New York, I'm in Brooklyn. I'm not in Queens.
Brooklyn's got some good pizza too. Yeah. Wait, are you? You're not from Brooklyn.
It's the same.
Right?
It's the same water.
Yeah.
It's the same Queens water. They ship it over.
And so, are you from Houston originally?
Yeah, you could say that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I lived a lot of places, but Houston is home. My mom's from here. My mom's from Compton.
Oh, L.A. Okay,
yeah,
nice.
I got like 45 cousins and uncles out here.
So, are you staying with your family in Compton?
No, I would, but, you know, my schedule, I don't want to come in on old people that late.
Yeah. No, I do stand up as well, and I've always heard of you, and I feel like there's not too many comedians that I've heard of that don't live in L.A. or New York. I feel like somehow you've made a much bigger name for yourself than most people can living in Houston. Like, I can't name another Houston comic. I'm sure there's some great ones, but I can't name them.
Thea Vidal, Sam Kinison.
But Sam Kinison moved, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, he was there for a long time.
Yeah, or what I'm saying is someone who lives in Houston.
Yeah, I'm probably the only one.
Yeah, and with the internet, it's a fair game. Anybody could do it.
I was before the internet.
Yeah, you were.
Yeah.
No, I heard of you 10 years ago when I moved here.
Way before the internet. I make that abundantly clear that I was before social media and I was before the internet. People was hearing about me because I was, you know, I was traveling a lot. I was, you know, a lot of places, but I was, you know, you come through Houston, I'm there. Like, everybody comes through Houston because the scene is so good. You know, audience is so good. I think L.A. has a lot of, as a comic, I've never thought that you could grow in L.A.
It's hard.
I didn't think that you could grow. I didn't think that you could put a real show together based upon being here. I think most DL is successful at it, you know, at doing it, but it's not a lot of LA comics because he's from here. He's actually from here. He's not a guy that moved here. Especially the guys who moved here. It's like they get, it's like a setback damn near to me.
Yeah, in some ways, definitely. You get less stage time, and then when you're the stage time you do have, you feel like it's your showcase. So I've been struggling that with lately. As I get better shows, ironically, I feel like I'm growing less because the shitty shows and the shows you don't care about are kind of where you grow and where you're not scared to take chances and try new things.
Like, as a new comic, what you need to do as to develop, you need as much stage time as possible. So what is the stage time out here? How much time? What's the maximum time? Because I remember coming here and they told me that a headliner did 20 minutes.
Right.
And I was like, what?
Like, yeah.
I'm just now warming up at 20 minutes. Like, what are you talking about?
If you're the top dog in LA, you're doing 320 minutes sets a night. That's the top. That's like, and I don't get that. I get 110 minutes set a night. Yeah.
You said if you're the top dog, you get 320 minutes.
Yeah.
I'd do an hour and a half show.
But then you wouldn't get booked again. Then they'd be like, Ollie doesn't, he runs the light. He doesn't respect the light. He's not coming back here.
This is the thing. When I came to the improv, I've come here once. I came to the improv and the guy asked me, like, how long are you going to do? I'm like, well, the opening's going to do 10. Features gonna do 15, then I'm gonna do like an hour, hour 10. He's like, oh, the people, they not gonna stay. They like, what? I said, okay, we'll see about
it. Yeah, we'll see if they stay.
And at 45, he was standing in the corner like, this is amazing. Like, then I got off like hour 10. He's like, I said, I thought they was gonna leave. He's like,
I was wrong.
Different. Yeah, man, I tell, my shortest story is 16 minutes. So why would I do
it? You have a 16-minute story on stage. Yeah. Is that what you're saying? Yeah.
I have, that's the shortest story.
Wow.
Like I open, my opening story, it depends on which one I'm doing, but any opening story is at least 20 minutes.
I feel like I first heard of you from Comedy Central. Is that where you first became like recognized or known? Mm-hmm. Where would you say?
Def Jam.
That's right, Def Jam.
In 2008, mm-hmm. Def Jam. I was a season finale on Def Jam.
I don't know. I'm not in touch with the Def Jam community. I should be.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of good comics on there.
Like the greatest comics came from Def Jam.
Mm-hmm.
Like I don't know anybody in the top tier right now was on Def Jam, from Chappelle to DL, Earthquake, Cedric, Steve, Jamie, Chris Tucker. Like, yeah, people who don't know about Def Jam, that's comedians are doing themselves a grave disservice.
Because mm-hmm.
That's
where it happens.
That's like, who's bigger than these guys that came off of Def Jam?
Not too many. There's a few, but not too many.
Yeah. It's like Def Jam was the pinnacle of comedy at one point.
And how'd you do that being a Houston comic? How'd you get on Def Jam?
I was on the road with DL, the season DL hosted. I was on the mm-hmm. road with him, but I had already knew Bob Sumner.
Gotcha.
And they saw you. I won back in 2000. I won the Def Jam, won a Def Jam showcase where you get a jacket and all this. So I still have my jacket that say 2000 on it. And so then Comic View. I think in comedy there's no one thing. It's like different audiences see you from in different positions.
Mm-hmm.
Like Comedy Central. Let's see. You saw Ari's show, probably.
Oh, yeah. That might have been it. Yeah, that was This is not happening.
So mm-hmm. This is not happening. I don't really attribute it to Comedy Central. I attribute it to Ari's show.
Yeah.
Because that show was living on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
This is not happening on the internet before it was with Comedy Central.
That's right.
So the show, big shout out to Chase DeRusso. He the one told me about the storytelling show.
Oh, nice. Like, yeah, I know Chase.
He was like, hey, man, I think this show would be great for you. Because they, Comedy Central, I had already won. So before, let's go back. Let's go to before This Is Not Happening. I won Comedy Central's Comic to Watch in 2013. And so with that, it comes with album and a show. You get an opportunity to appear on another Comedy Central show. So the first show they offered me was young guy named Adam Devine.
Maybe
yeah. It was his house party. He had a house.
Oh,
party.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember that show. Yeah. Yeah.
So he was like, Matt Broussard was another Houston guy that was on there, and I was like, no, I don't want to be on that show. Like I literally just told him, no, I don't think it fits what I do. And then they came up with another show. I was like, no, I don't. And they couldn't believe I was turning down shows. It was like,
well, I can't believe it. I'm hearing it now. I sound like you turned it down.
It's like, nah, I'm cool. And then Chase called me and said, hey man, Comedy Central has this show. They just picked a show up, came off the internet. This is not happening. You should do this show. So I went on the internet, I looked at the show, and I was like, oh, hell yeah. This is the show. So I told them that's what I wanted to do. Big shout out to Ann Harris. She's like, okay, let me figure it out. Eric Abrams wanted me on the show or didn't know me.
Right.
At all. So Eric was pushing. Eric was like, no, trust me on this. And I did the show, and Ari always said, Mexican got on boots. Prison Riot is one of his favorite stories. So then I came back and did another story called Mitchell. Then I came back and did a story about, so Comedy Central.
Oh, you're on it three times?
Yes.
Damn, okay.
So Comedy Central.
You're a hit.
So they replaced Ari with Roy.
Yes.
I wasn't going to do the show, even though I love Roy. I wasn't going to do the show because it wasn't one of the guys that was from This Is Not Happening.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't want me to host it. They didn't want Burt to host it. They didn't want Joy Diaz to host it. I was like, what? So these are the guys to me. It's like, that's a part of the
for that show.
Yeah, that's the part of the clique. So I was like, they didn't want Tom Segura to host mm-hmm. it. I was confused by all this. So then they got Roy. Love Roy. Roy's a friend of mine.
Hilarious, yeah.
But I am standing with the team. Like, I'm not doing it. Like, I'm not doing it. It's not Ari. It's not none of the guys. I'm doing it. Eric, but they hired Eric. They kept Eric on and the rest of the staff. And then I called Ari. I was like, hey, they want me to do this show. They want me to do your show. I'm not doing it unless you approve it, unless you cool with it. And he's like, hey man, go on and do the show. I was like, cool. So in protest of them not having Ari, I did a story about Ari when Ari hosted the show, which is the mushroom story. When Ari, the second season, Ari gave everybody an eighth of mushrooms. And I ate mine. And because I didn't know what they were. I'm like, I just thought it was like dried mushroom chips. And at the time I was a vegetarian, and I'm like, all right, it's cool as shit. Brought me some mushroom chips. And so I eat these mushrooms. And Billy Sorrell, another comic, he's like, hey man, I don't think this is gonna go well. And I'm like, what? And then Ari came like, yo, Ali, where your mushrooms? I'm like, I ate them. He's like, all of them? I'm like, yeah. And he was like, have you ever done mushrooms before? I'm like, done them. Like, I had them before, like, on pizza and spaghetti. Like, he's like, no, something's going to happen to you. And I was like, what? And my God, if I tell you what I went through that night.
I've done mushrooms, magic mushrooms, but I've never done them by mistake. That sounds intense.
I'm staying in the same hotel that I did the mushrooms in, the Lowe's. And it was a journey. It was a thing.
Where did you explore, or did you stay in your room? What did you do?
Oh man, my room was being explored. Like, man, it was a lot of, I was making a lot of mushroom mistakes. I know for facts that I cut that light off and on at least 400 times. Like, it was, I don't know if it was the sound. Oh, it was I don't know what I was doing, man. It was a long night. And then I had to go to the airport in like 5 hours.
Damn. So you're tripping up until your trip?
Up until I got home. Like, I was still, I was rolling. It was crazy. Like, I wouldn't go through when you check in, through security check.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't go through it. I remember asking that man, I said, hey, it's a lot of people going through this machine. Where are they going? And like, I'm not seeing them. Once they go through the machine, I'm not seeing them no more. He's like, I don't know. They go in various places. I'm like, oh hell no, I don't want to go various places. I don't want to go to various. I want to go to Houston. And I was on the phone with my assistant. She's like, no, you got to stop talking. I'm like, no, I got to ask the man the question. And I was not doing it.
Wow.
I had to go through I opted out.
You went to another world. You went to another dimension. Yeah, I remember being on mushroom staring at the TV while it was off. I was like, this is entertaining enough. I don't need to turn this thing on.
Yo, so on the TV, I'll never get this. I was watching, TV's on, and it was this luscious, they showing this grass, this beautiful grass. And it was lush. It was so that I was like, okay, this is what grass is supposed to look like. This is beautiful grass. And then this evil Home Depot lawnmower came and mowed the grass down, and I cried. I was in there crying for that grass. Like,
you're a sensitive man.
It was a lot going on with me. It was a lot. Mushrooms are not.
Have you done them since?
Yes. different ones, though. It was some different type of mushroom that made me very talkative. Like, I was calling people, like, 4 in the morning, like, hey, just calling you up, like, hey. And like, Ali, what's going on? Just want to talk to you about your life.
Wow. Like, it changed you. Made you a sensitive man. I've been going to therapy for the first time, and he wants me to take mushrooms and MDMA, and he wants to sit there and watch me do it as part of a therapy thing. So I'm kind
of
scared.
What type of therapist is this?
I don't know. Some drug therapist, I guess. I thought it was. I went there because of heartbreak, and now all of a sudden, I'm about to do an eighth of mushrooms and a gram of DMT or MDMA.
What is MDMA? What is it?
MDMA is, I think, the main chemical in Molly. So it's supposed to make you just feel really good and happy. So I think the reason they put that on top of the mushrooms is to make sure you have a good mushroom trip. Because some people can take mushrooms and then have a bad day. And they don't want that.
Man.
I've never had the bad day on mushrooms. Usually, when I do it, I have no problems in my life. I wait till I'm just having a good day. It's sunny outside. I'm with a friend. And we go have a good day. But I've heard of people who do it at night or who do it when they're stressed about something else. And then all of a sudden, they have the worst ride of their life. For 5 hours.
I've eaten chocolate with mushrooms in it. Had a great time. I've eaten just mushrooms straight out. Had a great time. I've never really had a bad time on mushrooms.
That's good.
Even the first time was like, it was. I didn't know what was happening, but it was definitely a good time.
It's almost good to take them when you don't know much about it, because then you're not overthinking it. You're not like, what's going to happen? You're just like, all right, let's see what happens. Were you scared to do mushrooms, I guess, recently, considering you went to jail for drugs? Mm-mm. That didn't affect you at all.
I don't even think I don't think about that I went to jail, because it was like, I was 19, got out at 25. Like, I'm almost 50. So I don't, jail is like the furthest thing from my mind when I'm doing anything.
But 6 years in a place for jail, it's like after that, I'd be like, I'm never touching drugs again. That's how I think how my brain would work. I'd be like, no more drugs for life.
I don't sell cocaine.
I know. Yeah, like,
it's like me consuming mushrooms is nowhere close to me selling.
Texas is crazy, though. You might go to jail in Texas for that. Especially as a black guy. Damn, the law's not on your side.
I think that narrative is different for certain people. I don't have bad run-ins with officers.
Except for the one you did have a bad run-in.
That wasn't even a bad run-in. That was them doing their job. That's the feds was doing their job. Like, if I wasn't selling coke, they probably would have just, I wouldn't have been on, yeah, I don't think they would have bothered me.
So you don't hold any ill will or bitterness towards them. You're like, yep, I got caught.
You was doing your job. Like, I was
good attitude.
I was in prison with a lot of people who were innocent by their stories. And then when I would listen to the stories, I was like, you know you're not innocent, right? you do know that you played a huge part in what happened. Like, I wasn't sitting in a Astra van and then the feds just ran up on me. I did some things. They had all type of surveillance and wiretaps, and it wasn't me. They wasn't after me.
Oh, they weren't.
They was after the person that we was selling to. They wasn't after me. I was under the radar.
You just got caught in the crossfires.
I was under the radar until my business partner did a deal with this guy, you know, named Kevin. So
is Kevin still in jail?
No, Kevin's out. I know Kevin's son. I know Kevin.
You're cool with Kevin?
Yeah. Kevin, he was the one that was under. He didn't know that they was after him like that. He should have. But
you're easy going. I feel like not only would I never want to touch drugs again after going to jail for 6 years, I would also, even if that guy was cool, I'd be like, I want to disassociate myself with Kevin for life. I never want to see Kevin again.
Kevin called me maybe a month ago. He owns a couple of things. He's doing business with this club, and the DJ didn't get paid. And I said, well, what happened? Like, who's the people? And so he told me who the people was. I called Kevin. I'm like, yo, Kev, you know X, Y, and Z didn't get paid. No, I didn't know, man, what's happening? And so we got that cleared up, and he got paid. But nah, I don't have any ill wills against, especially, it's not like I didn't know what I was doing. Like, man, I had been selling dope since I was 14. Damn. Like, at some point, you gonna get caught. Some point, you gonna get robbed. Some point, somebody gonna shoot at you.
You ever get robbed?
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. It was terrible, but, you know, all that's a payback. But it changed me.
Which is the worst experience, getting robbed or going to jail?
Going to jail. Yeah, because you going to jail, you're locked up somewhere. Getting robbed, you still out. You just got robbed. You're like, damn.
It's scary, though.
It's like, damn. All of it's scary. You know,
yeah.
You're in a scary business. I think that's one of the things that people don't understand. If you get in this business, or you get it back in the day, you got in this business, it's a different mindset that you have to go to. It's not, you can't be your same person. Like, if people think about Domino Effect 1, the first special I did, solo special I did, it was, I'm very jovial. I'm still a kid. I'm 14, mm-hmm. and I'm still, everything that's happening is very new. This special, Domino Effect 2 Lost, it's about losing a lot of things and losing myself. Cause now I'm a different person. I never even had a gun until something happened. Like, I was just, you know, it was honor amongst thieves.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. That's why I don't hold no ill will against anybody who I don't even hold no ill will against the feds who busted me. Now, is one dude that I'm not fond of. He was an informant, you know, but other than that, I'm pretty, that's all water under the bridge.
You let it go. Me.
Yeah.
Do you think I could survive in jail?
If I told you a couple of things to do.
Yeah, what should I do? Do you think it's something I should do too, as just like maybe for a month, just try it out?
I think everybody should go to jail when they first turn 18.
Too late for the 18 part, but 33.
Nah, 33 is a bit much. Let me tell you why. Because I went to jail maybe 44 for a traffic violation, which was weird.
You got sent to jail for a traffic violation? Yeah. Something happened off there.
Yeah, it was crazy. I got stopped, pulled over, and all of a sudden I'm going to jail. I'm like, what?
So, dude, were you going 100-something miles per hour?
Mm-mm. Nope, not at all.
Was it racism? What caused that?
I don't even know what it was. I just ended up in. And what's crazy, I would try to say off the top, oh, this is racism. But when I get to the jail in Brazoria County, it's all white guys that's locked up. Hmm. And so I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to survive this. Nobody's going to know that I went to jail. Nobody's going to know. But white guys watch Comedy Central. And
they all knew you.
So I'm walking with my mat, and this dude's holler out, yo, Ali, I hate you, Ali Sadiq from This Is Not Happening. And I was like, yeah, but this is not happening. So it was all white guys. It was funny. So I'm in there. I only stayed in there a day, but I had to stay overnight. And let me tell you, after sleeping on a very nice mattress, a prison mattress is not, yeah, I don't think it, my back still hurt. And that was that was 7 years ago. My back still hurt from just that overnight.
The worst part, though, that's not that bad. If the part you're thinking about is the mattresses were
that's
bad.
That's jail. That's not prison. That's jail. Right.
Oh, true, true, true. Oh, yeah. So what are the tips for me if I were to go to prison? I should know because I'm a criminal.
I don't think you're a criminal.
Thank you.
But if you just happen to end up by some strange odd reason, you incarcerated. Punch the first person in the face that say something out of line.
That's not what I wanted to hear you say.
Oh, yeah. You got to punch somebody in the face. Off the rip.
What if I don't have a good punch?
Still.
Hit them anyway.
Hit them anyway.
Just show them.
And the biggest thing is this. You got to show that you're not scared. Damn. Even though you are.
So should I hit someone even if no one does anything bad to me? Just hit them, hit someone, pick someone and hit them?
No, soon as somebody say something to you, wait for some, and then you got two routes to go. You can go the silent route where you don't say nothing ever, and you just stare. When people are talking to you, you just stare at them.
That sounds more like me.
And they're like, yo, this is white boy crazy as hell.
that sounds more
quiet and just. I'm talking about people having full conversations with you just.
Oh, never talk, no matter what. Even if they're being nice. Just,
don't say nothing. You just like, they gonna be like, yo, this white boy.
It's nuts.
You know the white boy over there that don't talk? He is wild as hell. Then people start having stories about you. So you know the white boy that don't talk, right? So you, I heard. The reason why you don't talk is that people gonna start making stuff up. So
okay, other like than that.
You have the, go. Somebody say something disrespectful, you go straight to their dome.
Is that what you did?
Nah, see, this is what people don't understand. And I almost despise it because I asked this, because I asked another guy this. If I was 6'8", would you have asked me what I did in prison to survive? If I was 6'8",
no.
About 200, why?
Because I think you could probably handle any physical altercation.
So at 5'7", you don't think I can? At 5'7"?
I think you can, but let me. If there was a 6'8" guy,
what difference
versus you?
What difference does that make?
Because size and strength matters in fighting.
You really believe that?
Yeah, look at UFC. That's why they don't put someone who's 180 against a guy who's 200 pounds, because that 20 pounds makes a difference.
If the 180 person ran into the 200 person in the street, you think that'd be a problem for him?
It could be.
But do you think a person that's a fighter? That said, 180 gives a damn about you being 200
Listen,
pounds.
Obviously, if you took a 200-pound, let's just use the word pussy, bitch, whatever you want to use.
You
versus
could do a 200-pound tough person. That don't mean shit to somebody who fight.
Mm-hmm.
And I think fighters don't understand that. Don't nobody care. You think if Tyson ran up on Sugar Ray Leonard, Sugar Ray would be like, oh, you Tyson. He don't give a shit about him being Tyson.
Mm-hmm.
Just like Muhammad Ali didn't give a damn that George Foreman outweighed him by damn near 20 pounds.
I just watched that movie. Good movie.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So at 5'7", like, I'm a problem, period.
Right.
And right. I always was a problem. Since I was a kid, I was a problem.
Right.
So that's why in the streets, I was still tough in the streets. So it don't matter. It's like when people look at my story about Quincy. Quincy's a big man. He stole me from behind because I'm a formidable opponent, regardless of what age I was at.
Right.
So that's why I tell
Makes
people.
Makes sense.
I don't give a fuck about no goddamn size. And when somebody around me, they notice like, no, size ain't no different, make no difference to me. Ever. It's never made a difference to me. Even when I got jumped into a game, that's five people. Don't five people weigh more than one person? Makes no difference, though.
Yeah.
Fighting is in the heart and in the skill. Like, if it's like this with me, and just like when I was in prison, I've been talking about my experiences in prison for over 25 years. Why nobody ever questioned it? Because they know people who was in prison with me, they be like, nah, he's a problem. If you stepped on his toes, he's a problem. Just like now. At a comedy show, if you get out of line with me, I will beat the shit out you at a comedy show.
And like an audience member?
Hell yeah. So I let people jumping on stage with other comics. That shit don't happen with me. Because I'm a problem.
Yeah.
I'm a nice guy.
Until you make me not.
But I also, until I'm not nice.
Right. That makes sense.
But like I tell people all the time, if you understood the type of violence and viciousness it took to be this peaceful.
Yeah. I feel that. I feel it from across the table right now.
Like, it's like I, when I told a guy when he asked me that shit a couple years ago, and I asked him the same thing. So what make you think I couldn't take care of myself? Because mm-hmm. So like with me.
So even though I'm 5'9", you think you could take me on?
Easy.
Easy?
Easy.
Wouldn't even be a challenge?
Wouldn't even be a challenge.
Why not? You don't know my background.
It don't matter.
Look at this. Watch now.
It wouldn't matter your background because it's
now?
Like this. If you decided to bother me, you're going to have to prove your background.
What about now?
It wouldn't even matter. That don't even matter. That
look at how hard. Look at that bone. Look how hard that looks.
That looks like a hard bone.
Yeah.
But you see the difference between yours and mine? I don't even have
Damn,
a knuckle
what's that
from
scar from.
I don't even have a knuckle from smashing people.
Damn.
Like my whole hand looks different.
Damn. Okay, I got to work
on it.
You see,
this is my jab hand. It looks all pretty.
That and, does look different.
And,
yeah.
And got all the knuckles and.
But, oh, that means I know which side you're weaker on.
Nah. Which side?
The jab side.
No. Strong jab. But this is the one that levels
the pile driver.
That levels it out.
I'm gonna after this interview, I'm signing up for boxing classes, I think. That's what I'm gonna do.
Boxing. I have a couple of different disciplines under my belt.
Yeah?
A couple of different ones.
When I moved here, there was a comedy boxing match amongst it was just all, you know, out of shape. Fat comedians fighting each other, but it was fun. Russell Peters was the judge. It was a wild time. It was a wild night.
I've called out the whole celebrity boxing community, and nobody's answered.
No one wants you? No one wants to take you on?
I would love. I would
Someone
love
will.
Somebody will, and but don't wait till I'm 55.
That's what I was gonna say. You might be getting a little too old for boxing. You don't want that
CT. No,
CTE.
We train every day.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah.
Is that what you do for exercise?
Yeah.
Boxing, cool.
I have two sons that box, and a little daughter that box.
Wow.
So it's
boxing, whole boxing family.
Yeah.
So, I went on a date with a professional. I don't want to say his name, but I went on a date with a boxer's older sister once. I don't want to say his name because what if you heard it and then he'd try and box me?
Nah, boxers don't really go after people because they know they licensed and you not. So
I kissed her though, and then ghosted her. I kissed her and didn't call her back, so you might want to go after me now if he hears that.
Nah.
I kissed her with tongue and everything.
you French kissed her.
I French kissed his older sister.
Who's the boxer?
I'll bleep it out. Ryan Garcia.
Who gives a damn about Ryan Garcia?
He could probably beat me up.
Ryan,
he's a professional boxer.
Hey, man.
He just lost a fight, though.
Hit him with a body shot. Hey,
he's small, though.
Which is way hard. Like, people like, oh, Ryan Garcia's. That body shot is vicious. It's a lot.
Oh, yeah. He's the one he got hit, and then, like, 10 seconds later.
The same thing. Fell. But I don't know why they're giving that title to him. It's not like multiple fighters have not been able to come. And big fighters. So what did De La Hoya get hit with? A body shot and couldn't make it out the corner. It was like, bam. Then he tried to take a step and then had to go to his knee. Floyd hit him with a body shot.
Damn.
A body shot is vicious, man.
Yeah, if it hits you in the right spot.
I hit people with body shots in street fights, and they don't understand what's happening. Like, yeah, you shutting down. You see your liver? It's not working right now.
Damn. That almost, in some ways, it's worse than a headshot.
It is.
Yeah.
Because you're looking at me. You're looking at me and it's like, I can't, you know I can't breathe, right? Yeah, I know.
Yeah, it's probably scary too. You're like, what is happening?
Yeah, my legs supposed to do something.
When you got out of jail,
mm-hmm. Prison.
Prison, and that's when you started stand up, right? Right after? Mm-hmm. Did you have an extra fire under you? Were you really motivated in stand up? Or because you were like newly free out of jail, you're like, I'm just enjoying my life?
Mm-mm. I was inside. I started practicing inside.
You
like,
knew?
Like, I knew what I was going to do when I got out.
Wow.
Yeah, I had a very good skill set of being very jovial and sarcastic in a space where, yeah, I was a lot of people's outlet. They know I'm going to come to the day room and I'm going to start immediately talking crazy.
Did that ever get you into trouble or no?
Nah, people
didn't
most,
upset
most,
anyone.
Most people, I upset people. I upset people all the time. Like the what? Let me see what fight I got into It was behind the Cowboys, though. It wasn't. It was like I was just talking crazy about the Cowboys, and this dude, don't say nothing else about the Cowboys. And I say, oh, what?
Yeah.
Like what's gonna happen? We'll see. Nah, let's see now. Let's see now. And everybody told him like, yo, you know he fight. Like, yeah. Got his ass beat behind some people he didn't know.
Like, getting in a physical fight about a sports team, it's like, that's so lame.
In prison, it happens.
Yeah. It happens at the stadium, too.
In a free society, it's different. But in a prison, you don't have nothing else to do.
You find things to fight about.
Yeah, you find things. Like, yeah. Hey, man, stop breathing out loud. Oh, what? That is. But no, when I first got out, knowing, being very intentional about what I wanted to do, what the thing that lit the fire up under me was when people was telling me that I had to move other places to be successful. That shit pissed me off.
You're like, no, you don't.
Because it didn't make sense. Like, I don't have no problem with somebody saying something. But when it does not make sense, like, why would I have to move another place to become a successful comedian? They don't laugh in Texas? Like, I'm confused. Oh, but it's just what all the people like. But that's the problem. Why would I go somewhere and be crowded, mm-hmm. and then not get enough? Like, it's not enough stage time out here for me.
No,
it's just
right.
not enough. Like, you practicing with three, what's the average time? Like,
I'm getting 5 to 10 minute spots most of the time.
Okay, and you do that how consistent?
A few times a week, 4 or 5 times a week.
Yeah.
We're getting spots.
And what, before you was getting the five to ten, what were you getting before
three.
That? Three, right?
Yeah.
So if you're practicing for 3 minutes, for how long? A couple years?
Yeah. 2 years, 3 minute spots, maybe two a night.
So that's 6 minutes. Then you go up to 5 to 10 now, mm-hmm. after a couple of years.
Yeah.
So you going, how long are you gonna do the 5 to 10 till you move up to 10 to 15?
When I feature for people too on the road, so when I'm on the road, I'm doing 15 to 25-ish.
Okay.
So that's about where I'm at. I'm like a feature.
Okay.
Act right now.
So when I was the feature for DL, this is the difference between being in Houston. I'm going up in Houston, plus I had rooms. I'm going up at Comedy Club, and I'm doing 20. Started off doing 5 for about 3 months, and then I was up to 20.
Yeah.
So I'm doing 20 minutes every night. I'm like, every night.
Wow.
I'm doing 20 minutes every night. So then I'm hosting my own room. So I'm doing a lot of comics not showing up. So I'm doing anywhere from 30 to an hour every night.
That'll make you
stronger. Think, that's just the first 5 years.
Yeah. And that's something else that doesn't happen here. Comics not showing up. Here you show up because they will replace you. There's thousands of comedians. So if you give them any reason not to book you again, they're not booking you again.
And then what's crazy is the bookings. When I heard what people were getting paid.
Oh, usually nothing. Sometimes $30, $50. But that's like, if you get paid $50 in LA, you're like, damn, okay, this show pays.
I was paying comics that's the opening guy, 50.
Mm-hmm.
And it scales up. I'm gonna have 4 guys on the show. Dude, like a lot of guys from LA was coming out to do my rooms, just do my week in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
You leave with $1,000.
Yeah,
because you're doing. And
doesn't happen out here.
Yeah, that's crazy town.
Yeah, unless you're booking out, unless it's your show, like you said here, and you're selling the tickets, then you can make some. But even then, it's hard because people give out a lot of free tickets here because there's so much entertainment. You can't really sell tickets that easily unless you have someone famous.
I remember when they used to give away the tickets to all these events, and I refused. Like, it wasn't happening.
Yeah.
It's like, yo, no, Ali, show, you got to pay. Yeah. But I get a free ticket. No, you don't get no free tickets here.
Go to the other shows. Go to the free shows.
I don't have a problem with you going to the free shows. Like, go ahead.
You have like a foresight for these things. Like, I don't need to move. I'm charging. Like, you're just like, I don't care. I'm doing it my way.
So now, if you come see me, my ticket price is like $45, $50, $60. because we gearing up for something else. Like, I see it different. I just have a different plan. So I've been doing stand-up for 25 years. I've been on TV since 2000.
What have you seen as, like, the biggest change since 25? So I'm 10 years in. Like, has it changed, or do you think stand-up basically has been the same for those 25 it's years?
Definitely changed.
What has been the biggest change for you?
People not being original. People being able to get away with doing other people's stuff.
That happens more now? Yeah, less originality?
Yeah, it's definitely less originality. Definitely less originality. Like, most of the guys who I see now, I've seen it before. Like, I can tell you somebody who they got it from. Like, mm-hmm. I know this style.
And so what do you think has caused that? Just watching too much stand-up? Other people stand-up on TV and stuff?
People not being able to be themselves. People not being able to be themselves. Like, if this is the stigma. All New York comics talk about the same thing. All Atlanta comics talk about the same thing. All LA comics talk about the same thing. So then when it comes to DC, when it comes to Chicago, when it comes to Houston, you can tell the difference that they're not talking about New York stuff. They're not talking about LA stuff. They're not talking about Atlanta stuff. They're talking from their perspective in the Midwest. And most of it is about them, how they're not New York, how they're not. But even LA guys, people are moved to LA, and then you'll hear them on the road, just move to LA. You didn't just fucking move to LA. You from LA. What the fuck is you talking about? But it's a stigma. Just like if you hard pressed to find a New York comic that don't talk about Puerto Ricans in the train, in the projects. Mm-hmm. But it is some, but they getting overshadowed by what everybody else does. You know, I was in Atlanta one time. I'm like, so does everybody out here just smoke weed and have sex? Like, what's the other perspectives? But then you look at the guys, the older guys that's from that area. DL doesn't talk about L.A. Eric Blake doesn't talk about L.A. Scruncho don't talk about L.A. Then you go to New York. You have all the older guys from New York. Rob Stapleton, Talent, Capone, Drew Frazier. Then you have the people from the older guys from Atlanta. Which are the Arnaz Jays, the Bruces, the Earthquakes. Then you have the white guys that's from there that have a different perspective because it's a mainstream thing. And the mainstream guys, what they have an advantage in, they get a chance to grow because the audiences are not as harsh. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not in that space where you got to go and do a bunch of crowd work to get a... Why are you talking about to the crowd? Did somebody come to hear you do crowd work? It's just different. So you have the guys from, now you have the guys from like St. Louis and Chicago and the Midwest that's just talking about their experience. You know, like Domino Effect. Domino Effect, the first one is I did a 35-minute story up front just to set up the rest of it.
Yeah.
So... now I'm with Domino Effect 2, it's the same format. But I'm just talking about me. I'm not even mentioning the city.
I was gonna ask you how you come up with so much material, and is it just because you talk about you? Do you sit down and write? Do you just have things that come to you and try it on stage? Because you have what, 5 albums or something like that? 7 albums? Mm-hmm. Wow.
So I just was asked this thing, how do I know that something's ready to put it together as a special? When I can close with all the stories that's from the hour that I'm doing, or the hour and a half that I'm doing. So I'm going to take the first story, even though I'm doing other material, I'm going to close with that. Then I'm going to be doing other material, then I'm going to close with the second story. So without me, because it's like you got to hide. I hide my material in my material. Like, my actual specials are different from my club show, which is it's supposed to be. Some people's special is a club show. Mm-hmm. That's did with lights. And I'm like, That's not a special. We've heard all the special has a lot of perspective in it. And most people's stage stand-up show is just, yeah, I wouldn't do a special with crowd work. It doesn't fit into it.
It's blowing up on TikTok lately. That's what everyone's been into.
Yeah, that's how comedy works now as a fad. Mm-hmm. I would never do that shit.
Yeah.
Because I would never do that. I would never do the, I'm going to post something, I'm going to give a reaction to it, to the side, split camera. All that shit is lame. Because you saw somebody else do it, and then you started, oh, I'm going to put my spin on. That shit is lame. George Carlin was totally different from Cosby. Cosby was totally different from Carol Burnett. Carol Burnett was totally different than Rodney Dangerfield. Like, that's the thing. Have your own...
Yeah,
your own specific thing. You know, Phyllis Diller didn't sound like Mons Mabley at all. So I'm confused on how you get to everybody doing their version of the same shit. That's not stand-up.
Yeah. Yeah, it's lame. When you put it like that, it is lame.
It's
like a motivational speak. Hearing you talk about comedy for a half hour has made me go, yeah, it's like firing me up.
So like one of the best specials that I saw recently, and I saw it when it first came out, Son of Gary, Dan Sober's special. I watched it from beginning to end, and it was fantastic. I was like, man, this is the shit right here. And Michelle Wolf's special was good. The first one. You know, once you lock into getting past her voice, you know, like, your shit is good. like, damn, Michelle, like, somebody need to hit her in the throat. but the material was good. So I watch other people's special, like Fluffy. Fluffy always does a good show. Gabriel, he always has a fucking good special.
He's got jokes, for sure.
Yeah, like, Ari's special was fucking fantastic. Like, oh man.
Yeah.
It was fucking fantastic. And this was crazy. I was there. I watched him do it. Like, when he was running it, I was like, oh, this shit gonna be crazy. And then the visual made it even crazier with the candles. Eric Abrams have done a fantastic job. It was just a great special.
Yeah, it was unique. It was good. Like, I agree.
Chris's last special was but Tambourine was fucking excellent.
Yeah, I love the divorce material.
Yeah, Tambourine was, man, the way I watch specials, because my laughs don't come with color. So it's like if it's funny, it's funny. Oh, you watching them white guys? Don Rickles was one of the best goddamn comics. I grew up watching him. So yes, doesn't like comedy, great comedy movies of all times. The Jerk, Steve Martin is fucking hysterical.
Oh yeah, one of the best.
But is it better than Life? No, but it was a great goddamn.
Yeah, it's still good.
It was a great movie. But I don't even look at it based on color. I look at it based on funny, and it's a lot of funny everybody.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying. Shane Wang is a very funny goddamn dude. He's Houston. You know, that's a
Houston. Is he from Houston?
Yes, hell yes. Nice.
You know him?
Most funny people are from Houston.
You knew him when he was in Houston?
Yes. My guy who passed, Ralphie May.
Oh, yeah.
He's Houston. Fucking hysterical. Billy D. Washington is hysterical. You know, it's these guys, Marcus D. Wiley. He's clean. But he's hysterical. You know, it's most Houston guys are funny. It's hard pressed to find a Houston guy that's really not.
Oh, I'm sure there's some bad ones too.
Oh, yeah. I said, we talking about the upper echelon. It's very hard pressed. But we come with a different thing because we know we have to. And we have a lot of material. And most guys are not going to lean on, you're not even gonna know they're from Houston. Like Keir Spates, is from Houston. Kevin Iso is from Houston. Bryson Brown is from Houston. It's like all these guys who started in Houston that was hysterical. I'm still chasing Bill Hicks.
Yeah, he's great.
And that's the thing. We still behind in certain things. Like Bill Hicks get a lot of admiration other places. But I've done a lot more than Bill Hicks, and that's why I'm still trying to get my.
But it's also, you also don't want to get in the mindset where you're comparing yourself to other people, right? Just compare yourself to yourself.
Nah, you definitely compare yourself.
You can't help it sometimes, you want to be doing it.
Nah, we talking about accolades. Like on the stand up, when you're doing stand up, you always comparing yourself to somebody else, but it's the confidence that you have. To do that though, like I used to think, oh man, can you follow that person? And now I'm like, man, I gotta find somebody who I can't follow. Like who can't?
Not too many. Them? Yeah,
it's nobody. It's not a person. It's not a person alive.
I wouldn't want to follow like a magic comic.
I wouldn't give a shit. I used to care about that. I used to care about people who use music cues. I used to care about people who could do impressions.
Yeah.
I used to care about people who could do magic and all this shit. Now I be waiting. Like, what? He doing magic? Cool. Like, because I'm gonna say something about him. Like, yo, man, where did that damn dove come from? Like, I'm gonna say I have enough cachet now, and developed enough cachet that it doesn't matter. Who is in front?
Mm-hmm.
I'm coming to do whatever time I'm coming to do.
Is there anything in your life, not comedy related, in your regular life that I could help you with as your unlicensed therapist?
Is anything in my regular life that you could help me with?
Yeah, yes. You got any issues?
Yes, I have a lot of issues.
Okay, let's hear a good one.
I'm not respected in my house.
Your family doesn't respect
no,
you?
No, not at all.
Damn, like
it's so disrespectful.
So if you tell your daughter, hey, go clean your room, she's not doing
that. That shit ain't getting done.
Damn.
And they in my mind, because it ain't mine, and like, he's leaving in a couple hours. Like,
oh, because you're gone all the time. You're traveling too much.
Like, and then, man, I'm talking about the level. No, do you understand how much this elevates me?
That must make you mad.
Oh, because see, okay, let me tell you. This is why. In the streets, if somebody did, if I told somebody to do something and they didn't do it,
you hit them.
I know how to change that in the streets. If I'm in prison, if somebody disrespected me by not doing something I asked them to do, I know how to change that.
But not a little girl.
I can't do my family like that. I can't.
Yeah.
I be wanting to put somebody up against the wall. Like, yo, let me tell you something. like I be wanting to talk so tough. Yeah. To my family, like, say, let me run this down. I said this to my son one time. I was dead ass serious. Like, say, my man, let me. And I think when just like he's like, say, my man, let me run this to you, bro. Do you think I'm the type of man that lets somebody step on me in the street? My son is like,
and he's like, shut up, dad.
He's like, what? I'm like, no, I just want, and I'm close to him too. In his ear, I'm like, I just want you to, I just want to ask you, do you think? That your father's the type of man to let people step on me in the street. He's like, nah, dad. So, why you think you can step on me, fam? I just want to know. You know?
Did that work?
Hell no. He the room's still not clean, man.
You want to know why? It's because, and this is just my theory, I could be wrong, you give them too good of a life. They're too spoiled. They got it all. You got them a house. They got it too easy. They need some struggle in their life so they could appreciate having their room. They don't have any appreciation for their room, so they mess it up.
Do you know, this is the first time I hope my mother don't hear something I'm on. Because she said the exact same thing. She's like, see, the problem is you're giving them a good life. I'm like, no, mama, that's not it.
It's too good. They got it too good.
It's like, yo.
And that could happen. You could give someone a life that's too good. You want to give your family everything, right? You want them to have a great life. But you could give them too good of a life because then they don't appreciate it.
I'm firing the cleaning lady. Because I struggle with this. Because in my mind, I'm like, yo.
I'm not saying to do this, but when I was a kid, my best friend, Don, he didn't clean his room. His parents took the door off of his room I said, you don't want to clean your room? You don't have a door. They took off the door until he started cleaning his room, and they put his door back on. Took away all his privacy.
Okay. Let me tell you why that wouldn't work with my son. Because I'm, hey, keep your door open. His sisters run. Now they have an open policy to run back and forth to each other's room without the door being closed. So now it's a game.
Oh, they leave it open anyway.
They leave it open anyway.
Gotcha.
And they would turn into some sort of game.
Yeah, they'd be like, this is cool. Thanks for taking off the door, Dad.
Like, the level of disrespect, though.
Damn.
It is, man, you don't understand. Like, I am.
Do they listen to your wife?
No! Like, don't listen to nobody. So she's a part of the problem.
Damn. Take away their iPhones. Boom. You take away a kid's screen time, they'll go crazy.
I thought that.
Didn't work either?
So, took away all the iPads. Took away everything. Do you know, I come home and the baby is in the dog's harness and they're throwing the baby. They bungee jumping the baby off the top banister.
Jeez.
Onto the couch.
And you got some demon kids.
They parachuting off. They literally trying to figure out if the sheet gets enough air. Oh, they get real creative after that. Like, you can't give these kids any, oh, we taking your iPads. We taking all that. A word? Cool. All right. Let's see. If I tie this dresser to my body and I throw it off it, will it snatch me? Will it be able to hold me on the other side? They're going to come up with something.
You know what my parents did to me?
What?
They sent me to a military high school. You could do that. Send those kids away. You
then
can't manage
then
them.
I'm going to miss them.
Yeah.
I visit
them.
I miss the chaos. I miss the chaos of my home so much, but I come home and I holler about things that they actually don't care. I threaten these kids, and they like, okay, when is he going to be able to carry this out?
Make them eat carrots.
They love carrots.
Dang.
They love vegetables.
I don't know what. I'm out of ideas. You're screwed.
This is what I'm telling you.
How old are they?
7.
Okay. Just
5. They 2. Just,
maybe they'll grow
12.
Out of it. They might grow out. A 12-year-old should be starting to behave pretty soon. No? He's the worst one?
I have a 24-year-old that is the best person, the best child that I even have. But she had her difficulties between 14 and 16. And then after that, it just stopped when she got it, because she's a chef. But when... If you saw my kids are very upper crust. They're very bougie.
That's it? I knew it. They're spoiled.
But they eat a lot of vegetables. And if you went to a restaurant with my kids, you would be amazed. You'd be like, the things they're going to order. And you're like, no, that's what they want? Yeah. Hey.
All right. Get it.
Hey, I went to this restaurant called Oceanair, and they bring... like radishes and carrots and celery out. And literally, I said, hey, y'all gonna have to bring like everybody their own bowl of this. They're like, sir, listen to me. Bring more of all of this. The cilantro, the parsley, everything. The lady brought it and they ravished it like it was, like they just made a salad. They just ravished it. And the lady came back and she was like, so they ate all of this? I'm like, the radishes, all of this. You have very well. Now, these are kids who love vegetables. They grew up.
That's good.
I grow vegetables. You know, I garden still. And that's why I go out. And the reason why I garden is because I don't want to be in the house with them. So I just go outside.
It's your activity.
Yeah, I just go outside and just be with the earth.
Wow. A lot of people are getting into gardening.
Did you say
lately.
Older? Go ahead and say it. A lot of older.
Yeah, I was about to say that. Hey, dads. I should say that. Dads. I should say not old, just a dad.
How old are you?
33.
You're saying,
I'm starting to get. I'm starting to get up there.
You're
I'm starting
just saying,
to feel.
He's my brother, which is a crazy man. He's a crazy man at 33. He's like, he found a Rockwaller and gonna call me. but he owes me $6,000. He gonna call me, hey man, I found this Rockwaller. She has fleas right now, but I'm taking her to get a bath. You wanna? I don't want no full grown Rockwaller. Are you trying?
That's cute though. He loves animals. He's saving animals. That's a nice guy. I mean, that's how you know your brother has a good heart, because he's saving animals.
But let me tell you, he owes me $6,000. Can he pay me my money back? That's when I know he has a good heart.
He'll be like, hey, do you want this Rottweiler? It's $6,000. We're even now. We're even now.
That's why I didn't get it, because I already knew he was going to try to call it even. Where my money at?
Do you have any advice for me? Right now I'm going through a heartbreak. I just got broken up with about a month ago. And then yesterday, she called me, because we were still seeing each other. Even though we were broken up, we would still like hook up once a week. Yesterday, she called me and said, hey, I need to cut it off completely, which I knew needed to happen. She's more adult. Even though she's 10 years younger than me, she's more mature than I am. So yesterday, she called me and said, hey, we need to cut it off completely. What should I do to get over?
First, let's discuss that she's 10 years older than you.
10 years younger.
10 years younger than
yeah.
you. Let's discuss that part first.
Hey, she's beautiful. The heart wants what it wants.
Most children are beautiful.
And just to be clear, he's saying children as an adult. She's an adult. A legal adult.
Yeah, she's 23, but she's still a child. So 25 is when you actually have some adult thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
So you 33, she 23. I'll give you the same advice I would give my brother, because he's been through this. Be done. It's a period piece. It's not, you and a 23-year-old, that's a lot of growing. A lot of growing, because you're already an adult.
Yeah.
So now you have a person with not adult responsibilities just yet, not adult thoughts. It's still you need somebody like 30.
Yeah.
30 who is in the prime of their life still, because a 23-year-old is really still 13.
Right.
Like in real time. This is a very juvenile person in the head. I did this.
You haven't done shit. You're 23.
You 23. You was just 10. You was just 10. And I tell a lot of men this, that in relationships with younger girls, because this is a question that I'm not foreign to. You have to cut that part off. Like it right now, even the lowest I go is 40, because I'm 49.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I know the development, man, it's all about the development. A 23-year-old is still eating cake for breakfast. And you're 33, you're realistically going towards more structure mm-hmm. in your life. No. You've been doing stand-up 10 years, right? Mm-hmm. Are you the same as you were at 23? Do you even think about comedy the same?
No way.
That's
way different.
So think about how you were 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And think, would you want to deal with your 23-year-old self? Like, if you was a comic and you had to be on the road with your 23-year-old self at 33...
Yeah, it's a good way to think about it.
How long would it be before you fired yourself?
Oh,
like,
man.
I'm not going to be on the road with you. Like, how long before you fire yourself?
A day.
Two days. I would literally, my 25-year-old self, looking at myself from that perspective, I'm like, hell no. Hell no. And I was a listener. I was still a listener, and I was like, no. It's like when I was 19, 20, 21 in prison, literally by the time I was 24, I was talking to 19-year-olds and 21-year-olds like, man, what are you, like, like sitting down, like, hey man, what are you trying to get out of this experience? Because now I'm groomed and I'm acclimated to this life, and I understand what you actually need that you don't see. I don't know. It's not even a heartbreak. It's actually, how long were y'all together?
A year.
It's not a heartbreak. It is actually this. It's uncomfortable because it was familiar. It's like, were you coming home to her every night?
Not every night. No, we didn't live together.
Yeah, you didn't live together. Mm-hmm. So you don't even understand this part. You know how scary it is when you've been living in a house with somebody for years, and then they're going to be gone, and you know for a fact they're going to be gone. My family left for 7 days, and I knew that they were going to be gone. But I'm so used to driving up, and it's lights on, it's all type of activity. I literally drove past my house like and said this out loud to myself, oh, hell no, somebody's in there. like somebody broke in my house and they just waiting on me to come in. And like all night it was like, oh, I don't like this. It's very uncomfortable. Because you're used to talking to somebody, used to somebody calling you, all of these things. Once you get acclimated to not being accustomed to that, you forget. Like you probably are busy, but if you didn't have to check in with somebody or thinking about somebody else's thing, you probably became a lot more responsible for the life of that person.
Mm-hmm.
Like talking and, hey, talking through things and, hey, giving advice. It becomes almost like habit. Like it's like you breaking a year's habit.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Not your heart is not broken. It's a year's habit. Because getting attached to somebody in a year. So she was 22.
She actually just turned 24. She was 23.
Just turned 24. Yeah. So now, let me tell you what's going to happen without turning 24. 6 months after she turned 24, she's going to start removing people from her life that she think is holding her back. Because it's getting you ready for 25. Because 25 is when these actual grown thoughts happen. So now you turn 25, you done removed all these people from your life, and now at 25, the first thing you say when somebody asks about your age or something comes up, I'm almost 30. You done missed 5 whole years of your life because now you're thinking grown. You are 33. You about to be 35.
Getting up there.
The first thing you're going to start thinking about is 40. Marriage, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Home. All these type of things. All these stuff that becomes important to you. May want to have children. You start planning out your life. And you know how hard it is to plan out your life with somebody who is just like,
a kid.
I'm just trying to live life.
Yeah.
I'm not living by no plan. I'm just trying to live life. And you like, no, we need to be. No. I just want to live life. Then it becomes another struggle that you didn't age yourself trying to groom somebody to a position that you are, that you're in, and they got 10 years to go to that position.
Yeah.
It's like talking to a young comic who had some success that went viral on something, and you keep telling them, you know that's not it, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of stepping stones to this. No, I went viral. I got over 200. You could have 1 million followers. That does not make you a good stand-up. The followers don't mean shit.
Yeah, they don't equate.
The platform don't mean, but you doing a horrible show. Oh, I do this thing on, that doesn't make you a stand-up. It takes time to develop to be a stand-up. You don't even start getting close to good until you're in 10 years. Just think about that. It takes 10 years for you to start getting good at something that you've been doing for 10 years because you still don't know. It's a lot of little nuances, a lot of little whys that got to be connected. People say, people ask me, what's the best thing you tell an up and coming comic? Stay up and coming. I always stay up and coming. I've been doing it 25 years. I'm still up and coming. Because I'm the work is still important to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm never, I got it.
As soon as you think you got it, you realize you don't got it. You have one of those sets.
It's like, so many levels to having it. You grow in this business and you get more and more comfortable with who you are. And even when you think you got it, you got to elevate to another level from that. So in relationships, it's still the same as being a good comic. It's like, I always ask myself the hard questions when I was coming up, and I ask people in relationships the hard questions. Do you want to grow with this person, or is this person convenient at this time of your growth? And when people ask themselves the actual hard question, you know the hardest question I ever asked myself in comedy, and I do it to other people. When they come off stage, man, what did you think of my show? And I ask people, would you pay for that? And then would you pay for it again? My performance is always like that. Would I pay to see myself perform
twice?
And then would I pay to see that again?
I like that.
You pay for it once.
Yeah. Or you pay for it twice. Because that's how you know if a movie's good. You walk out of the movie theater, do you want to see it again? Or you're like, I saw it, but I'm done with that now.
I saw it, I'm cool.
Yeah.
But would you go see it again? Hell yeah, I go see that. Hell yeah, I go see John Wick again.
Oh, I love John Wick, dude. I've seen all those movies twice. That was a good one.
Yeah.
All right, thanks for doing the podcast, man. Nice to meet you. Nice hanging. Man.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to
Unlicensed
Therapy with Ari Manis.